Up for your rights. Good morning, good morning. This is Joanne Bowman, and you're listening to Voices from the Edge. Today, we're going to have a very free-flowing program. I want to know what's on your mind. I want to do some assessment of our election last week. I also want to talk about the FBI attempting to find someone to spy on elected officials at the city of Portland. Those are the two top things on my mind this morning, but as always, I'm very interested in what's on your mind. So give me a call, 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187 is the number to call. So as most of you may have heard by now, yesterday morning, Mayor Tom Potter actually posted a letter on his City of Portland website and held a press conference to say that a City of Portland employee had been approached by an FBI agent and asked to provide information to the FBI on what's going on inside the upper echelons of the City Hall elected officials. And needless to say, I was so proud of our mayor yesterday because he was pretty appalled that the FBI would be attempting to do something when there is no allegation whatsoever of any wrongdoing taking place. I got to tell you, it's a pretty I was so proud that he came out right away and just said, this is just not acceptable. It's not appropriate. And it's certainly not the FBI's role. It's not the FBI role to be trying to recruit spies within the city, within City Hall. That was what happened yesterday, at the city of Portland. And so, you want to give me your opinion? Should the FBI, is this appropriate use of FBI resources? Why would you think that that would be so? But call me and tell me what you think. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I also want to talk a little bit about the series of community listening sessions that Oregon Action has been doing with Portland Police Department. You may remember last week, Chief Sizer presented to the public the findings of the latest stop data. And what that data showed was that if you are African-American, you are 2.4 times more likely to be stopped and searched by Portland police officers. And if you are a Latino individual, you are 1.7 times more likely to be stopped and searched by Portland police. The report also showed that if you are Caucasian or Asian, you are underrepresented in the number of police stops and searches that are conducted by the Portland Police Bureau. And so I'm pleased that we're not trying to debate the question anymore whether or not racial profiling exists. What we're trying to do now is to eliminate racial profiling from Portland Police Department, which I think is a big shift that has taken over the years. I've participated in many, many, many police meetings over the years, and this is the first time I believe that we've actually started from acknowledging that there's a problem with racial profiling. And so the question is, how do we fix it as compared to you're calling people racist if you say that there's racial profiling existing. I'm very happy that we're not stuck in whether or not we're calling people racist. We're not calling people racist, but clearly, if you stop 56% of the people you stop, you find nothing wrong with. Clearly, there's a problem in how you're making traffic stops. So I'm going to go to the phone line. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I'm proud of the mayor for the stand that that he's taking on this matter. Now, I'm going to offer just some speculations here, but it might have had something to do with the fact that that the city withdrew from the Joint Terrorism Task Force and the FBI was retaliating. It also may have to do with the fact that the city is a very liberal city, and the FBI might have been trying to retaliate on that basis. I just thought I'd share some of my views.
Well, that's an interesting perspective. You would think that they would have gotten over us pulling out of the Joint Terrorism Task Force. And it's interesting because even when we were in the Joint Terrorism Task Force, there were only two police officers that were City of Portland police officers that were assigned to that task force. So it makes you wonder, and I agree with you about Portland City Council being pretty liberal. And, of course, the FBI director works at the pleasure of the sitting president. And so that may or may not have something to do with it, but I appreciate you sharing your viewpoint, and I'm glad to hear that you're pretty proud of our mayor, too. And he's gone. He left. Okay. Thought he was still there, waiting to have a conversation. Is there another caller out there? No? Okay. So there's one concern that I have that's being proposed by the City of Portland City Council, which is a new task force that I understand is going to be put in place sometime soon to address the issue of people panhandling at downtown in the city of Portland. My understanding is that the committee will consist of downtown business interests as well as social service agencies. And if you may remember, just a year and a half ago, there was a sit lie ordinance passed that we were concerned about because we were concerned about rousing people because they didn't look, quote-unquote, like folks that the business owners wanted downtown. We were concerned about how that would really be implemented. And now I understand there's this new proposal for this committee that's going to review the sit lie ordinance and make recommendations back to the city council for changes. And so it's just a FYI for you community folks out there that we should pay attention to who gets appointed to this committee, and then we should follow whatever recommendations come out of that work. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Yeah, hello.
Good morning.
Yes, hello. I wonder if there's a class profiling going on, too, because I know of recently a Caucasian mother who has happens to be low income, but has a DEQ problem when the car was stopped. And also I wanted to ask if anybody knows if Code Pink is still outside the White House in Washington, D.C., or even there. So I will listen to the comments, whatever.
Okay, well, I'd love to, in regard to whether or not people are profiled because they're poor.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No question that people are profiled because they're poor. There's no question about that. If we kept data, we would find that the data would be consistent with the data around race.
Okay.
Because those are the people that are targeted by the police all the time. It's people of color, it's low-income people, it's people with no resources. So absolutely, there's no question about that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great day. And I don't know the answer to the Code Pink question, but we've got really smart callers, so I'm sure somebody will let me know. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. I had two comments. The first one being, I think with the Mayor Tom Potter encouraging such an open dialogue, it really helped that when the FBI had approached the city employee that they felt like they had someone to go to and communicate with that was going to listen to them and take their concerns. I think in a lot of other cities, when the FBI would approach someone for this kind of information gathering, they might feel rather intimidated because a lot of and city employees and politicians wouldn't take this concern seriously because it would just mean someone else is paying your check then.
That's a really good point. I think you're absolutely right, because I would compare the city of Portland to Multnomah County, you know, and it's like in Multnomah County, I'm not sure that the employee would have felt comfortable going to the top to say this is what's going on.
Yeah, very good point. Yeah, I don't think they would have, I don't think they would have felt comfortable in a number of positions. So I really think Tom Potter's done a great job of encouraging people to communicate a dialogue in both directions.
I agree with that.
And I think as far as racial profiling, you know, people get racially profiled from all police officers and from all people, no matter what ethnic minority they are. I think racial profiling is something that we all do. It's a society problem based on the infrastructure and the communities that we live in and the way that we interact with our policing mechanism. And I think it's an institutionalized problem, not just for the white people or for the police chiefs, but for all of us to look at and recognize that it's institutionalized within everyone's brain, and that we all need to take a step back and recognize that if this is a problem, how do we develop a system that takes into account that we have people of lower socioeconomic status that are getting raked up by the system that don't necessarily need to be there? And for me, that just includes creating more resources for people so they're not getting dragged up in this criminal system, and maybe we can have a better educational system that we can drag them into.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I absolutely agree with you. It's certainly not a problem that is unique to Portland Police Bureau. Racial profiling exists throughout our society. So I absolutely agree with that. I think the reason why it becomes such an issue when you're dealing with police officers is that there is consequences for people being forced into interactions with law enforcement officers. And so that's why I think it's something that we absolutely have to work to eliminate in the police department, because those are the people that are hired to protect and serve all of us. They're not just hired to protect and serve land owners or business owners or white people or rich people. They're there to protect and serve us all. And if we're truly going to ever have community policing in Oregon, we've got to make sure that we have police officers that treat everybody with the same level of dignity and respect.
That's right. And I think the more education and the more dialogue we have, the more people that have less interaction with the police force are going to understand what resources they can rely on.
Exactly.
Without fear of becoming a criminal. Because I think at this point in time, with my experience, if you're homeless or if you're poor or if you're looking funny for some apparent reason and you need help from the police, there's a huge level of intimidation when you ask for help from those police officers. And a lot of times we can't ask for help.
Talk about that a little bit. I'd like to hear, what do you mean by that?
Well, I've had a number of experiences. I was working as a clerk in a store, and someone had come in and intimidated our customers. I had called the police. I was looking like a young punk skateboard kid at the time, and the police officer came in and started asking me what I did to provoke this guy and telling me I was the criminal.
Ah.
And I was a clerk in the store at that point and thinking, wow, I would never assume a police officer would start to turn me into the criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And then I learned more and more about, people that are homeless when they need help. You can't call a police officer that's arrested you for being drunk in public or for having your personal belongings in a cart on the street, you know, the day earlier. You can't call that same police officer and say, hey, you know, a guy drove by and threw this huge thing at me and I got his license plate. Can you come help me? That's not possible really in this culture. Mm-hmm. We haven't really fostered a sense of security and understanding where these, you know, police forces are able to really help all people. It's really a class struggle with this police force helping you know, people higher on the socioeconomic ladder, in my experience.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you calling in this morning and sharing your experience. And you're right. It would be a lot harder for someone that's low income to actually have those kind of interactions with the police, especially if they've had a previous history of being sent off, you know, having some other interaction with the law enforcement officers.
Right.
So appreciate your call. And hopefully you'll make one of these community listening sessions. There's one tonight at the East Portland Community Center, which is at 735 Southeast 106. Next week will be Central, so that will be downtown. The week after that will be North Portland, and the week after that will be Northeast. And so it's important that as many community members as possible get their voice heard in that process. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Good morning, Carl. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I have a little different vein on this police staffing stuff.
Okay.
A couple of years after I moved to town here, I guess about 7 or 8 years ago, they changed hiring policies. They used to require police in this town to have bachelor's degrees.
Right.
And they have since changed that. And personally, I always thought that that was a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of officers in this town being required to have a bachelor's degree because I think it exposes, those last 2 years of college exposed people to all sorts of more expanded worldviews than you might get out of the first 2 years of just a policing class,
mm-hmm.
or coming out of the Marines and, you know, something beyond Taser 101.
Right.
And I personally would really like to see us go back to requiring bachelor's degrees, and I think that would put more thoughtful, not necessarily more intelligent, but more thoughtful and more competent individuals on the street. Thank you.
Can we talk about that for a moment?
Sure.
Because I don't know that a college degree would ensure that somebody would treat people with dignity and respect. If you are a racist to your core, having a college degree does not change your racist viewpoint.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And I didn't mean to imply that.
Oh, okay.
What I was saying, I think more classes involving psychology,
uh-huh.
sociology, economics, there's a lot of subject matter out there that if you tack on two more years of college,
mm-hmm.
simply expands the worldview of
right.
the individual. I don't know. And I would think, and as an extension of that, I would think, personally, that a more exposed individual in that sense would be less likely to harbor such extreme racist views, and in the long term would enhance the diversity and competency of the police department.
Hmm. Let me offer this suggestion. I kind of think that one of the best things we could do to help police who are in trained to be police officers is to bring community members into the police academy and have them share their experiences with police officers on the street. And because while they're in training, they're in a mindset of really trying to understand what law enforcement, what the role and responsibility of law enforcement is. And so if they had an opportunity in the early stages of their training to understand what the negative repercussions could be if they did their job inappropriately, I think that might help. I think also making sure having police officers live in the city that they patrol, that would help. When you become part of the community that you're patrolling, then you have more of a stake in making sure that all the community members are invested in a safe community. If you just kind of come, if you live out in the suburbs and you see this as a place that you occupy during the workday because, you know, this is where the gangs are, this is where all the bad stuff is happening, and you don't have a personal stake in that community, I think it would be very hard to be a good police officer under those circumstances. So, so I think that there are some other things that we can do. I just don't think that we've tried them yet, and I'm certainly hopeful that we will, as we continue these dialogues, that we'll keep coming up with ideas and recommendations that will make this better. One of the things that we said at the very beginning of these trainings is that clearly we do not believe that all police officers in Portland Police Bureau are racist, but we do believe that there are police officers that target people of color specifically for law enforcement intervention, and we believe that there appears to be the other thing that we believe is because we cannot track the numbers back to individual officers, we can't tell you whether there are just one or two officers that are stopping the bulk of people for no reason or whether it is rampant throughout the police bureau. So unless we can actually take those numbers that were produced last week and tie them back to individual officers, we're left to speculate about how invasive this problem is and how easy we could actually eliminate racial profiling from Portland Police Department. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We're talking about the community listening sessions that are taking place with Portland Police Bureau. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I was talking with some young people about this discussion of maybe if officers were more educated, there would be less profiling.
Mm-hmm.
And one young man said, well, I suppose if somebody was more worldly exposed and had a better sense of justice, they'd find something else to be.
Uh-huh.
And that usually is the case.
Right.
The disparities in the criminal justice system occur throughout, not just in the front lines of law enforcement. They occur in sentencing. They occur in what people are charged with. They occur in treatment in the prisons. So it's a systematic problem that occurs among educated people. While we're speaking of the mayor being upset about being spied on, I wish we could turn that around and understand how upset household members are to discover that they're being spied on by their neighbors. And spying is not cool.
Right.
So it goes both ways. If a city is reported to be so liberal, not quite sure what that means, if we allow those sorts of things to happen to citizens of our community on an individual basis in individual homes, and then be outraged when it occurs at City Hall. Does that make any sense?
Makes perfect sense, yes.
So we've got to really look at our hypocrisies. And at some point, sure enough, we need to have this unequal justice remedied and stopped. But then we need to take it a step further after we've fully acknowledged it and figured out a way to stop, then reparate those who have been harmed. And that's going to be a big job because there have been people harmed in so many ways, including young people who thought they were free.
Right.
And who have been accosted by police officers and unequally protected. So how do we reparate them?
That's an excellent point. And what I'm hopeful of is as we continue these listening sessions that the community will come up with some real concrete recommendations for moving forward.
Right. And when we do get to the point of reparating, I hope that the people who...
Excuse me, can you hold for just a sec? I have to do my station announcement.
Sure.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Thank you. Sorry.
That have been injured and whose rights have been violated have some say and what that reparation will be rather than someone else deciding what it should be.
Yes, absolutely. And okay. I think, you know, I think we've got this window of opportunity. We've got this incredible chief, Chief Sizer, who is absolutely committed to continuing this dialogue and actually making, I believe, actually committed to making real change take place.
Right, and then we need to look at the entire system.
Yes, I was just going there. I was yes. going to say that, you know, the fact that the chief and she's bringing command staff to each of these meetings and the street officers who are actually patrolling the various neighborhoods, and having people, the community members, come out and fully participate in these meetings and come up with some recommendations for moving forward, I believe we've at this opportunity where the community and the police could actually work together to actually, guess what, create community policing in the city of Portland, and actually be able to do it in a manner that the community supports the police efforts and the police supports the community effort, and it makes our community better because of it.
I agree. And one thing, I understand and I do agree that people of lower socioeconomic background, Caucasians, probably are targeted. However, wealthy people of color are also targeted.
Yes.
So there is a difference there.
Well, yeah, there's no economic security for people of color when it comes to being stopped or profiled.
Right.
Whereas if you have resources, I mean, because, you know, you go back to Perez, right? Perez is dead today because he was driving in a car that looked too new for the neighborhood he was driving in.
Yeah, I don't want to get started on that.
Yeah,
one.
We don't want to go down that.
One officer said they didn't notice what color he was. They couldn't. Windows, and the other one said he didn't make eye contact, so I don't know which it was.
We try not to go back there, but you know, if we don't remember our past, we're doomed to repeat it.
Right.
And so it's
I just didn't want to.
Yeah, you don't want to go down that
right now.
Yeah, you don't.
I haven't forgot it. That's
okay,
what
I know.
Okay.
I know. Yeah, I know you. You stay connected with these issues.
All right. Well, thank you.
Appreciate your call. Uh-huh. Have a great day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You're listening to Voices from the Edge, and it is my pleasure, as always, to be here with you, and I'm Joanne Bowman. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
Thank you. I thought the last caller was very thoughtful in her presentation. There's a couple things I think that are important to realize here, and that is, first of all, that police officers are really human beings who have a particular function.
Right.
And one of the things that I hope that these dialogues will bring out is how that the police, there's a culture within the police bureau, in every police bureau, and in ours particularly, there's a culture that the police officers then live within and reinforce among themselves.
Right.
And I think a part of that culture, and maybe people outside of the police force itself, tend to think of police officers as special in some way, you know, and I don't think that they're special necessarily. I think they're just human beings who've chosen a particular profession and moved into that profession. And the idea that they put themselves in harm's way for the rest of us, I think, is mystique and not true. You know, I think that it's not special that they are targets. It's special that they carry guns and are willing to use them.
Right.
And that's a different way of looking at it. It's not that they, you know, because actually more people are harmed by the police than police being harmed here.
That's absolutely true.
So we really need to reverse our thinking about who they are and how they approach policing here.
You know, it's a really good point that you raised. And in fact, the most dangerous job that you could possibly have, believe it or not, is a taxi driver.
Okay.
More taxi drivers are shot and killed each year than police officers combined across the country.
Oh, there are many more professions where people are injured on the job or killed on the job, maybe not by direct action of other people, but truck drivers die more often than police drivers, police on the job.
Good point. Well, you know, but you raise a really good point, and I'm actually hopeful because the first meeting that we had, it was really clear to me that when police came, because Chief Sizer has agreed to participate in all these, and she brought command staff and street-level staff, and it was clear at the first meeting, the first half hour, you could see the stiffness in how people were sitting. You could see that people were suspicious. They had their hands folded. They were almost like balled up in a knot for about the first half hour of the dialogue. But after that, something really interesting happened, which was people started really deeply listening to what was being said. Because once people realized that they couldn't respond to community testimony and the community couldn't respond when the police were talking, I think it gave people this sense of, okay, so I'm not really going to be personally attacked. And I actually checked this at the end with a couple of police officers because I said, well, I noticed the difference between how you guys were at the first half hour and how you are at the back end. At the back end, people were laughing and joking and exchanging business cards and didn't even want to stop the dialogue, you know. I mean, I had to actually turn the lights off and on a few times to get people to stop talking. And I really walked out of that meeting hopeful because I have participated in many, many dialogues with the police department and the community, and they normally go bad. They normally are an opportunity for the community to come and plus and cuss the police out, or the police come armed with PowerPoint presentations and talk nonstop for an hour and 45 minutes and then open it up to the public for a dialogue with 15 minutes left, right?
Yeah, I've been there, too, where they've come not only they armed with the PowerPoints, but they're also armed as well and in uniform
and
very stiff.
And looking
and with
very,
guns on their hips,
yes.
And it's just, you know.
And looking very intimidating.
Yeah.
And just coming in as if they're like a gang, right?
Exactly.
And in this environment, I was absolutely amazed at how. Oh, and one of the things that we did ask the chief to do is to have the street officers come in plain clothes.
Yes.
Because it is intimidating for regular citizens to be sitting side by side with somebody that's armed to the teeth. Like.
And it also promotes that mystique that we just got to get away from.
That's right.
On the other hand, if we do understand them as human beings or begin to see them in that realm and they see themselves in that realm, then we can also understand that they need human support. They need support as humans, not just as police, in order to do their job.
I have to tell you that was one of the most enlightening things that happened for me was listening to a police officer say, you know, we're told that the way that we make connections with the community is we go to these neighborhood association meetings, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the neighborhood association meetings has the same 5 to 7 people that come about whatever the issue is that they're concerned about in their neighborhood, and it really doesn't give them the opportunity to really build relationships with people in the local community.
Right.
I was kind of blown away by that because, as you said, they agreed, you know, we've got this mindset of this us versus them mentality because when we step out to actually have a conversation with the community, we get cussed out, right? We get told we're racist.
Yeah.
We get told that we are just, you know, evil beings and shouldn't exist at all. When hearing a couple of the younger police officers say, you know, we're regular people who thought we could make a difference by being a police officer and we could actually help to make the community better. We didn't become police officers because we wanted to like be evil people and keep people down. And so, but unless we actually have opportunities for community and police to have those conversations in an environment where they feel safe sharing that information, we end up with this us versus them mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the challenge is, of course, since they're the ones that are fully armed, they get to control any of those interactions out in public. But when you create these kind of community efforts that actually invite the police to come in and be full participants with some ground rules that say we're not going to disrespect anybody, but we're going to put our issues on the table, it makes the world of difference. So I have to say I walked out of that meeting last week, number one, totally impressed with Chief Sizer because she stayed until like 9:30 talking to people.
Mm-hmm.
She hung out as long as people wanted to talk to her. And I was also impressed with the fact that that they were able to really humanize the police officers and their interaction with the community last week. And so I'm hopeful that these sessions that will come out at the end with some recommendations that continues this dialogue in some ongoing manner so that we can keep those lines of communication open.
Could I make 2 more points?
Absolutely.
Real quick. One is that I think your point about that community policing really depends on people being from and of the community also means that we need to see police officers engaged in their non-police officer role around.
Yes.
We need to see them shopping. We need to see them in our you know, community events. We need to see them just on the street as human beings.
Exactly.
More and more, because and the second point is, because one of, I've looked at some studies of community policing in England. Of course, these are smaller communities, but so are our neighborhoods, where the constables in these small villages are people from the villages, if you will, in England, and they're police officers almost by happenstance. You know, that just happens to be their job. Like, there's the butcher, there's the mayor, there's the policeman, you know?
Right.
And they all are just that kind of familiarity. So they know who they're talking with. They know the families. They know the community. They know the institutions like the churches and the schools and so forth and what goes on there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just kind of drive in, you know, brandish their power somehow, and then move out, you know, having quelled the immediate situation without having taken care of the roots of the issues. Not that they're social workers, but I mean, they understand how everything's linked.
Right.
And right now, I don't think our police officers understand how things are linked to each other necessarily.
I think that's absolutely true.
It's real isolated. And they also tend, again, to congregate among themselves because we don't give them breaks,
mm-hmm.
you know. We see them through their uniforms to some degree. And so they can only be human, in a sense, among themselves, if you will. And we've got to break ourselves out of that habit of dehumanizing them.
You know, you raise a good point, and I'm hoping that this is really the start of us actually realizing that what we're talking is human beings and human interaction.
Yes.
But I think the challenge on the community side is really, you know, when someone has the ability to have life and death decisions in their hands
yes.
on a daily basis, it's really hard to get beyond the uniform and the weapons and actually
yes.
to deal with somebody one-on-one as individual. So I agree with you. I mean, that's my goal. My goal is that once these sessions are over, that we find out that, number one, that we really have much more in common than we have difference.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, that if we can dialogue as individuals, we'll build better, stronger relationships. And we'll ultimately end up with a better policing force because of those relationships.
Yeah, and one that doesn't have as much of a militaristic kind of orientation towards what they're doing.
Well, and I have,
because we have the military goes and occupies foreign territories of
yes,
enemies.
Yes.
And fights with enemies. And what we're talking about is a domestic force for peacekeeping.
Well, and we saw that shift take place dramatically when we had Chief Coker. When Chief
yes.
Coker was here, our police force turned into an armed occupying force.
Yes, it did.
We have seen a lot less of that since his tenure ended here.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. I mean, it's a kind of slippery slope. It's very easy to go back to that mindset of, you know, we're in charge, and these are our streets, which is kind of a Coker's philosophy, and you're going to do what we tell you to do.
Yes.
And that's the way it is. But I'm hopeful. I mean, hope springs eternal because this is a good beginning.
Yes.
And we've got a lot more work to do, but it appears that all the parties involved, from the police chief to the command staff to the street officers, are committed to fully participating in this effort. And so,
thank you, Joanne, for all your work.
Thank you.
I
appreciate that.
Bye-bye.
Have a great day. 503-231-8187. What's on your mind this morning? That's the question. Give me a call, 503-231-8187. I was checking out the mayor's website. He's got a blog on racial profiling. And it's interesting as you read through his blog because people appear to be kind of debating whether or not the whole idea of racial profiling even exists or, once again, whether it's a perception by some community members. And, of course, the data that the Portland Police Bureau released is not disputed. It's their data, and their data says clearly that, in fact, racial profiling exists in the city of Portland. Good morning, Carla. Welcome to Kibbutz.
Yes, about Francis called in and was talking about community, about being spied on, but
right.
Isn't that what community policing is? And also, you work for Bev Stein.
I did.
And you're talking about how we can all get together and, you know, be fair and talk to each other. But Bev Dine and Vera Katz put more liens on poor people's property for, like, sidewalk violations or, you know, and taking people's property than anybody else.
And you
than even Frank Ivansee.
You based that on what?
Something I read in the Oregonian.
Hmm.
So, you know, and you belong to all these non-profit here that take donations from the large robber baron, like the great, the western states, you know, they take money from these robber baron foundations that actually should be paying the bills for all these illegal aliens that are in the country. You know, if they want to promote illegal aliens, they ought to be paying the medical bills and the education and, you know, instead of just being these think tanks and pollsters like Pew Charitable Trust, they're all the old oil men that you used to complain about.
I'm not sure if I know the point that you're trying to make. Are you implying that because I worked for Bev Stein that I'm somehow not authentic?
Well, that you're actually not working for the people. You're working for your own self-interest, like putting poor people out on the street because they don't have the money to repair the sidewalks.
You know,
putting liens on their property to get them out so you can have your little Pearl District in North Portland.
I think you got me mixed up with Vera Katz.
Well, Vera Katz and Bev Stein were, you know, joined at the hip.
No, Vera Katz ran the city of Portland, and Multnomah County was Bev Stein's territory.
And they always did things together.
They did some projects together.
Yeah, a lot of projects, and I think they even wanted to combine the city and county.
I was on a task force that looked at that twice.
Yeah,
so Bev Stein and they were joined
at the hip.
But, ma'am, you know, you're mixing up a whole lot of facts that don't add up to anything that makes sense.
Well, yes, it is, because KABU is not tolerant. They don't take calls from everybody. They're ganged up on. There's usually two people against one caller, and they're usually made fun of, you know, if they bring up anything relevant.
Well, I mean,
other than, you know, well, look at Tom Potter, your big hero. He makes $90,000 from his retirement pension, and then another $90,000, and he's probably working on a second pension plan, you know?
Well, he's earned both of them, so what is your point?
Well, poor people are paying to put these people in.
Well, he got elected by $25 contributions, so you're right. Poor people did get him elected to office.
Well,
but again, I say, what is your point? Are you upset
that you're sticking up for the very people that have robbed us blind?
But I don't.
And
your view and my view of who's robbing who is different, and I respect the fact that we have a different view.
What all the callers calling and saying is, you want your own little cliques in your own little neighborhoods, which is worse than the FBI spying on Tom Potter. It's the same difference, like Francis said, only you say that community policing isn't, you know, spying on your neighbors, when that's exactly what community policing is.
No, it's not. That
yes,
is,
it is. It,
well,
the
if,
very people
if I say,
that have the most, the very people in the neighborhoods that you want to run things are the very people that have always profited from, like, the loans from PDC and even when they did all those plans back 20 years ago, it's like North Portland was put in with the guy that owned Nature's Food, you know, and he started running things, and no wonder you got what you got.
You've always
pushed neighborhood associations, and now you're against neighborhood associations because you're not quite getting your way. Everything you promote has been the biggest problems that we've ever had.
You know, I actually have never promoted neighborhood associations because they've never been representative of the people who serve in neighborhoods. So,
well,
I'm not quite sure where you got that.
Most of the employees on your staff and on your board have been the heads of the neighborhood associations.
Do you even know where I work?
Yeah, you're with the Chamber of Commerce, the Black Chamber of Commerce, and double NAACP or whatever you call it.
So, ma'am, you don't know where I work. You don't know what I do. You don't know where I volunteer my time. But you have a lot of opinions about what I do and what I think and who I support.
Well, you worked for Bev Stein.
I did work for Bev Stein, but I haven't worked for Bev Stein since 2000.
Well, that's how you got to be the state rep, is, you know, by the backers of Bev Stein. It's kind of like when they put that guy on the school board.
No, let me tell you how I got to be a state rep.
Terry, what's his
People
name?
Voted for me. That's how I got to be a state rep.
Well, yeah, because Bev Stein had the voters back then. She didn't make it for governor because the whole state had to vote. But, I mean, you guys come from Philadelphia, you know, and then you come in and you want to start running things here.
Well, ma'am, this has been
you
fun.
You know, it's like the immigrants. All of a sudden they're on the streets.
I'm not from Philadelphia.
You know, all the poor people need to support their medical bills and their education and...
So I actually had to let that caller go because she didn't understand the concept of a talk show, and she didn't have any of her facts actually accurate. But I'm hopeful that she'll check her facts and maybe call back with a more coherent presentation. Good morning, caller. Welcome to Cable.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You mean you don't work for Bev Stein?
If I was still getting a check from Bev Stein, it was at 2000 was when I got the last one.
No.
And if she owes me money, then I want to put it out over the air. Bev, give me money, please.
Hello, I just have two quick comments
okay.
to make. I have an article here in front of me, a poll, or rather a survey made with CNN and Money Magazine on the 10 most dangerous jobs
mm-hmm.
in America,
uh-huh.
Dated September of last year.
Okay.
The number going from 10 to 1,
mm-hmm.
the 10th most dangerous job is taxi driver and chauffeur,
mm-hmm.
then commercial driver like trucks driver, sales workers. After that is electrical power line installers and repairers. After that is roofers, and then farmers and ranchers, then garbage collectors, and then number four is iron workers and steel workers, then it's commercial fishermen, then it's airline pilots, and the number one most dangerous job in America...
Da-da-da-da.
I feel like David Letterman.
Yeah, right.
Is loggers.
Loggers.
Lumberjacks.
Ah.
Police officers do not even make, and law enforcement do not even make this list.
The top ten, huh?
This is based on a fatality rate
mm-hmm.
per 1,000.
Wow.
And loggers last year lost 92.4 workers per 100,000. So while I do not, I don't disagree with the police officers' assertion that they do have a dangerous job, the fact that they are facing danger every day is just not true.
Mm-hmm.
Because they do face danger, but then so does anybody who walks outside their house. And my other comment is that police officers, you know, my father was a police officer and my mom was a court reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And I do support the need of police officers, and I know what type of job that they do. And we give them a lot of power over our lives. We give them a badge and a gun and a license to kill, so to speak.
Right.
I mean, I don't remember. I've lived in Oregon since the early 60s. I can't think of a time when a police officer was indicted by a grand jury for wrongful death in the line of duty. It may have happened, but I just can't think of it. It hasn't happened in the last 10 years.
No,
anyway.
It certainly hasn't happened.
Yeah, so we give them a lot of power over us. And while I agree that the need for that power exists, I don't think that it allows them to... I think with that power comes a lot of responsibility. And with that responsibility comes oversight. Because if you just give someone a lot of power, you know that phrase, absolute power corrupts absolutely?
Right, yes.
There has to be some sort of oversight. There has to be some sort of checks and balances. And I think that's what Mayor Potter was trying to say in his news conference
mm-hmm.
yesterday. If the FBI has a suspicion or an accusation or evidence of illegal activity in City Hall, then I absolutely 100% support them sending someone in there to check it out, either overtly or surreptitiously.
Right.
But just to have someone there to go fishing for information, that's just not right. And I don't even think it's legal.
You make excellent points, and I appreciate your call this morning.
All right.
Thank you.
Great show. Bye-bye.
Thank you. I appreciate that. 503-231-8187 is the number to call let me give you a heads up about a meeting that's coming up this Sunday, June 28th at the Northwest Progressive Community. They will be holding their regular monthly meeting at the People's Food Co-op, located at 3029 Southeast 21st Avenue at Tibbetts. There'll be a dessert potluck at 3:30, and from 4 to 6, the speaker will be Barbara Ellis of the Shoe Leather Brigade on the Oregon effort to have cities and counties submit articles for the impeachment of George Bush, and Janice Thompson will talk about the voter-owned election system. For more information, you can go to www.nwpcnews.org. Thank you very much. Good morning, Carla. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, hello. Am I on the air?
You are on the air, yes.
Well, thank you. Good morning,
Good morning.
Joanne. I really appreciate that last call. We seldom reflect on the fact that we write laws and we want to live in a nation of law, but we also have, it's almost like a public utility. We have institutions, the police and the DA, that have the monopoly on whether a law is enforced and upon whom to enforce it. End of story.
There is
virtually no other way, with some exceptions, to actually see that a law is enforced. I'd like a comment on that. In other countries, there are sometimes overlapping jurisdictions of police powers, and in this country we have less overlapping, I believe.
I think that's true.
Yeah. Now, that's in respect to the last caller. Actually, I'm very troubled and interested and moved by the caller before. Now, I think I've heard her call in before,
mm-hmm.
and I really believe that since I do know many people who have their deep roots of working class people in Portland,
mm-hmm.
whatever, from way back, I moved here in 73, and I know what this is like. People who lived here originally, you might say, all these people moving in, oh my goodness. So I respect some of the where she's coming from, and I'd actually like to talk to her someday. So I left my phone number with the engineer.
Okay.
So she could, if she's listening,
and she wants to,
and she wants to go to have coffee to talk about these things in at length, I'd be happy to do so, because I am very interested in that perspective. I'll tell you, the way we have rapid change in our country, in our city in particular, that sometimes just feels like an invasion.
Mm-hmm.
And an example mm-hmm. is this phenomenon that we sometimes are calling a gentrification. Well, but the business of people moving into Alberta Street, oh my God, they're taking over and so forth.
Yes.
Well, I don't think there's a plot out there, but the feelings of people suddenly finding their old community taken over, so to speak. People are laughing and playing on the community like it's theirs, but only yesterday it was mine. And,
yes.
And they don't even say hello to me, and they think I am a stranger.
They're calling the police on me because they say
exactly.
that I'm lottering,
exactly.
and this is the community I've lived in my whole life.
Exactly.
You know, I absolutely agree with that, and I wish the caller had
I understand.
You know, had stayed with one coherent thought that we could have followed.
It's hard to do.
I could feel her frustration.
Absolutely.
But she was just so far out there without facts, and she wasn't willing to talk. But hopefully she'd be willing to talk to you.
Sure.
And actually, because I know exactly what I know what many community members are going through. You can go on Mississippi Avenue is a perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
You can go from one end of Mississippi Avenue to the other end and not see one person of color your entire trip.
And I think the real troubling thing are two things. One, you go in an institution, there's something about it, and I can't put my finger on it. Someday we'll talk about it.
Okay.
What is it about these institutions that don't feel inviting to a person of the old community, we'll say?
Right, right. Well,
and
you know,
mm-hmm.
I've actually participated in some meetings on Alberta, and I remember there was a meeting at a coffee shop because the business owners on Alberta wanted to start a business association to represent their interests, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what was interesting is right directly across the street from the coffee shop was a barber shop that had been on that corner for 25 years.
Oh, I know that.
He didn't
I
get
know
a,
that place.
You know that place.
Yeah.
He didn't get an invite to the meeting to talk about the business association. There was another co-op down the
Excellent
street.
Example.
Roslyn's. Another business owner, strong, deep commitments in the community. She has the Alberta Co-op. She didn't get an invite
Absolutely.
To the business meeting.
Very important.
And so I go to the meeting.
Yeah.
The meeting is packed jam. There's about...
And they've invited you because...
They've invited me because they...
you're notable of that community.
Right.
They don't bother the guy
exactly.
next door.
Right, right. So they invited me because somebody had told them that I'd been involved in the Albina Community Plan. And so they wanted to pick my brain to find out how they could start their own business association.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I said to these individuals, well, are you aware that there's a Northeast Business Association that would say that they represent businesses in North and Northeast Portland?
Mm-hmm.
Are you aware that the Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs would say they represent business owners and business interests in
mm-hmm.
North and Northeast Portland? Are you aware that in North Portland there's also a business association? And so... putting this information on the table for these individuals, they still didn't get it. They didn't get that they had come in, they had the privilege of being able to buy a property, and they did, and they thought that because they had the privilege of being able to buy a property, they got the opportunity to dictate what the community norms would now be.
The owner gets to dictate, that's
right.
true.
That's right.
And there, but there should be some respect and recognition, and this being oblivious to this... not getting it, as you said.
Right.
Listen, when it's not, when institutions are not representative, the non-representation may be a cause of maybe caused by many things, and nobody is hard to say. Well, oh, who's to blame? That though, but it should be on the agenda when an institution or a neighborhood institution is not representing the community.
That's
and
absolutely
for these
so.
Folks, many times it's not on the agenda. I just some of these folks are associated with environmentalism,
mm-hmm.
and I tell you, I'm very disappointed that sometimes in the environmental in the community that I'm from, which is in far northeast, they people actually don't like environmentalists because they think they're exclusionary and elitist,
mm-hmm.
and even God forbid they even use the word racist. And I go to all my environmental meetings, and I think I've only seen one or two people of color. Now,
That's right.
I've never seen anything really overtly exclusionary.
Right.
But what is welcoming, and what I do see, is an absent agenda of how to reach out to a community that is not connected to what should be perceived as a very important policy and community issue.
And you know, you are so right on about that. What's interesting, what's most appalling about that is that it's not even on the agenda.
Exactly.
People don't even notice when they look around the room and there's only one or two people of color in the room.
And
it's as if that's what's expected.
And yet they probably all went to schools where they had five courses in Diversity 101.
That's right.
Well, I've taken a lot of your time. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome, and I appreciate you calling this
okay.
morning. Have a great day.
Yeah.
Coming up today, we need volunteers. We need you. We need you to volunteer to come over to KBOO and help us with mail our KBOO listeners guide. Today, we're going to start stuffing those envelopes at 10 a.m., and we'll go till about 4, unless we finish earlier. And the street address is 20 Southeast 8th. Please come, give us a hand if you've got some free time today. The more of you come, the less time it will take. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I am Joanne Bowman, and we're Voices from the Edge. Good morning, Carla. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
Say, look, I want to first of all hit this notion that I heard some callers expound on about don't forget that the police is human. Now, I just want to break something down to you.
All right.
You know, let's take a puppy. A puppy grows up in a household with human beings. And as it grows up, it becomes a dog. Although that's a canine, it has no canine instincts no more. It thinks it's a human. So let's take the police, for instance. The police, although they're human beings, policing is not predicated on humanity. It's predicated on policing. And so it doesn't come under the rim. They don't get rewarded. Police don't get promoted based on their humanity. And when you talk about, let me break it down. First of all, when you talk about intelligence, we have to first of all look at the intelligence of the legislature, because the police, their manifestations and all their habits derives from the mentality of the legislature, because, first of all, it's insanity. The whole thought process is insanity, that if a police is tired and he needs vacation, then all he has to do is go out and shoot somebody, because right away he's going to instantly get a paid vacation. And also...
Now, you're not suggesting that we have police officers that shoot people so they can get a vacation, are you?
I'm suggesting that the act of shooting the police leads to vacation. That's insanity. That's insanity. Matter of fact, we know that we live in a society that people are motivated by incentives. I mean, everybody daily is motivated by incentive. It is an incentive to kill somebody if you know you got to pay a vacation. That is an incentive. Crazy, too. And also, too, we know that right after that, we know that they're going to be found justifiable, because it always happened. Then after that, they have this, where all the police get together and they stand up and they walk up and they get their medals and their accommodation. All of this for killing somebody. Now, that whole thing there is insane. And so when we talk about police need to be educated, no, the legislature need to be educated, because the police derive all their insanity from the people in the legislature. And let's talk about the legislature. They are the posse of the rich, because rich people put them there. And they do really the bidding of the rich. And rich people ain't going to make any laws out here that's going to come against anything that they want to do. That is it in a nutshell. And so if you can crack that nut, then, you know, more power to you. But the deck is stacked, and I'm just trying to tell you how it goes. And so that, folks, is lesson 202 on the police. Now, I get into other areas of them guys. You know what I'm saying? Because I know them like a book from practical experience of growing up in the ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
You know, I hope you will make it a point to come and participate in at least one of these community listening sessions.
Well, I'm waiting to be invited.
You are invited. You have my invite right now. There's one tonight.
Where?
East Portland Community Center, located at 735 Southeast 106th Avenue. It starts at 6 p.m.
Okay, I'll try to make it on after.
Excellent. I'd love to see you there. Have a great day.
You too.
Okay. Coming up on Cable this morning at 9 on the Recovery Zone, Stephanie Potter speaks with members of the Village Focus International, a nonprofit organization seeking to build partnerships between Portland and villages in Southeast Asia. At 9:30, Press Watch will not be on today. Instead, we'll hear a program featuring Ray McGovern, who spent 27 years as a CIA analyst. He now directs the Servant Leadership School, an organization dedicated to helping the marginalized poor. At 10, Radio Beyond Borders presents a documentary on accents produced by Mae Kim. At 10:30 on Arts Focus, host Julie Bernard features the upcoming exhibit at Mark Woolley Gallery called Alien and Sedition, in association with Sedition Magazine. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, topics include turmoil in Afghanistan, the Senate immigration bill, and losing Arab hearts and minds. That's what's coming up today on KBOO. Good morning, Carla. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm not for sure about what the show's about. I'm on the road, and I kind of missed the intro to it.
Go ahead.
I heard you discussing Mississippi Avenue in Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
All the changes that are going on there.
Right.
And I live in St. John's,
mm-hmm.
right? Was a longtime resident when I first came to Portland in Northeast, used to live on Alberta. back when Shag's Arena was in business, if that tells you how long ago.
It's been a little while, huh?
Yeah, it's been a little while. I think what you're running into there is more the yuppie syndrome. I think it's more class or money based, because we're going through the same thing in St. John's. We've been discovered now, right?
Uh-huh, that's right. I was just going to say, you're next.
Yeah, so instead of being our good old redneck, blue-collar neighborhood,
right,
we have latte, and nobody's asking us, the long-term people there, whether this is what we want for our community.
Yes.
They're just doing it.
Right. You know, you raise a very good point, because actually, as soon as the light rail went in, I started thinking North Portland is next.
We're next. What we're waiting for is property values to hit a certain level on our house, and then we're headed for Columbia County, and Multnomah County can stew in its own juices. but I hate to do that. I've raised my family. That's my neighborhood.
That's right. Exactly. It's your neighborhood. You've got a lot invested in that neighborhood. You have a sense of community there. And, you know, actually, I remember having this conversation with Charlie Hales before he left the city council. And my question to him was, when the city is focused on redeveloping communities, whose job is it to build community in that new community?
It should be the community. It should be us,
but we're at a disadvantage, right? Because new folks moving in, like my examples in Northeast, I remember there's a shop on Northeast. I remember walking into it and thought, now, here's a shop in Northeast Portland that sells dresses that are $200 and up, right? And
right.
When I first walked into it, and it was a couple of years ago, I thought, oh, this shop didn't open for the people who currently live in this community. They opened for the people who are moving in.
Who are moving in.
And the same thing is happening in North Portland. So the lattes, the fancy food co-op shops, it's not for you, the folks that are there, the ones who have built the community and been there long term. It's for the ones that are coming next.
No, and the people whose community originally was, be squeezed out.
Right. That's right. And which is what we found in Northeast. The residents that were renting in Northeast now rent in Gresham, Troutdale, Hillsboro. And as you can imagine, they don't have the same access to transportation. So that also diminishes their employment opportunities.
Right. Well, I moved to Portland in the early 70s, very early 70s. And the first house my wife and I lived in when we were first married was at 9th and Sumner, if you know where that is.
Right. Yes, I do.
Then 8th and Roselawn, and then 10th and Northeast Portland, 13th and Alberta.
Right in the center. You were in the center for quite a while.
For a long time. And then when we moved out to St. John's and bought a house out here. And it was a different neighborhood, but I remember Shag's Arena and the Hi-Hat and Oscar and Milton's. I remember the old Northeast Portland. And I miss the old Portland, to tell you the truth.
Right.
We had our problems back then, but I think we were a better town than we are now.
Good observation. I hope that's not so, but we're certainly changing rapidly.
Well, thanks for your time. The only comment I had is that I don't think it's racial. I think it's economical. And I think that the old longtime residents of Portland are going to be squeezed out by developers and people that are looking out to make a buck and don't really care about the community or the flavor of it.
I think you're absolutely right. Thank you so much for your call.
You're welcome, ma'am.
Have a great day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We're getting down to our last few minutes, so we're going to speed up the callers now. Short, sweet, and to the point. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I will let you ask the question. Your last name is Bowman?
That's correct.
Did you have a father as well as a mother that taught or worked with the school district?
Actually, my husband's parents were Dolly and Joe Bowman.
Okay. I go back to where your father-in-law was working with the Portland police.
Oh, yes, he did. Uh-huh.
So I'll let you ask the questions. First, let me tell a joke.
Okay.
If you are, we'll give you two pickup trucks, and you put two guys in each car, pickups, start at Columbia, and try and get to Burnside. But the joke will be, hang a BB gun in the back of the window. Who's going to get stopped?
Who's going to get stopped? Me.
Right. And that is very plain, and that's very the way it works here. And it's real, yeah, out of the time that you guys talked about, there's only been one policeman that's been arrested and tried. And that's because he come from North Portland with a gun and shot a person in Southeast.
Ah.
And that was only because he was involved with the wife. And this was common knowledge.
Wow.
Now, I can go back to the 50s in regards to the police department or the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when the police was a little shady here in regards. But the point is, whenever people get killed here, they never ask the right questions when it goes to court.
What questions
and the
should
other
they
part
ask?
Of that
what
is...
What questions should they ask?
Well, number one, the poor guy who got shot in the car, well, we thought he had a gun.
Mm-hmm.
That's always the question.
Right.
Well, so what if he had a gun? He could have had a gun permit.
Mm-hmm.
So why are you shooting somebody? Bell, the bottom line is any black person is supposed to be a felon or supposed to have a gun. They do not follow procedure. And when they break procedure, they're protected.
Mm-hmm.
The DA does not ask the right questions. Certain parts of this here should be investigated by a federal or another agency, not handled by their own. Because one thing is they never convict their own.
True.
And everybody knows. And you keep holding. It's a dangerous job. I've done the job. But you can't go out and shoot people. Well, I feared for my life. It's a dangerous job. Get over fear.
Mm-hmm.
You have to follow a procedure, and if you don't, there's no justification of the law.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You do the same.
Bye.
Thank you for the call. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Good morning, caller. Please be short, sweet, and to the point.
Okay.
Okay?
All righty.
Well, you can say more than that.
Am I on?
You are.
I just had a couple of questions.
Okay.
I don't know if you've touched on this, but I remember the last police chief... actually ended up lowering the educational standards for Portland police officers.
That's correct.
And I don't know, is anybody working on reversing that? Because from what I remember, they used to have a four-year degree, and now it's only required that they have a two-year degree. And I'm wondering if you can correlate that with the high number of shootings lately.
Well, I don't think that a four-year college degree makes a police officer better than a police officer with a two-year degree. I don't think just by virtue of graduating from a four-year college, you get a better individual, a better educated individual who can do a better job as a police officer. I think one of the key criteria that we should be using to hire police officers is someone that has the ability to interact with a variety of different communities and to be able to command respect without demanding respect. And I don't know that you teach that in a four-year college.
I agree with that. I just was concerned about the lack of diversity in some of the two-year institutions around Oregon, especially the rural community colleges where a lot of the police officers are trained. I went to school at Western Oregon for a couple of years, and one of the biggest police academies is stationed in Monmouth, which is on campus. And
right.
I got to tell you, I mean, the mentality was way different than when I went to the more urban schools that had police training programs.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like there was a lack of color just on the people that are training to become police officers. I'm going to go ahead and go.
Well, it's a really good question. Thank you for calling.
Uh-huh.
And I'll just say, you know, I really think that having police actually who live within the city borders would have much more of an impact than adding two additional years of college. But thanks for your call. Appreciate you calling in. Good morning, caller. Short, sweet.
It's a really good question. Thank you for calling. And I'll just say, you know, I really think that
Oh yeah, that that playback, that pause and response. You got to hear me twice on that one, and it looks like we lost our last caller. But I wanted to follow up on what the caller said. This whole debate about whether a 2-year or a 4-year degree is makes police officers better or worse. In my opinion, I just don't think that the college degree in and of itself is necessary for someone to be a good, effective police officer. I think someone who has a commitment to working to make the community better, someone that has the ability to facilitate dialogue with community members, someone who can talk to people from all social economic backgrounds would make a much better police officer than someone who has spent 4 years in a college environment and have never had any interactions with anybody else. Good morning, caller. Welcome to Cable.
Thank you.
You're
I've
welcome.
Been enjoying your show.
Thank you.
Joanne.
Thank you.
Yeah, I wanted to, I was glad that guy said to that one woman who that she was basically attacking you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I was trying to get her to just have one point so I could focus on the one point, but she was all over the board.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to be quick and to the point.
Thank you.
And we'll see how it comes along.
Okay.
I'm a,
all right.
I'm a white woman. I'm trying to help end racism.
Wonderful.
And I think that white people in general, and I'm not afraid to be too general because I keep saying this, we have a little problem thinking about other people. And so those diversity things in college, I think that what they need to add is actually people getting their feelings out about racism when they're so they can think better.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you calling. And, you know, I'll just respond to that by saying one day in this country, we'll actually have an open and honest dialogue about race. We just keep continuing to assume that we're a melting pot, a mixed salad or whatever. And it ain't that way. It's never been that way. And until we get to a place where we're going to have an open, honest dialogue about race, we'll be stuck in this cycle that we continue to find ourselves in. Good morning, caller. Welcome to K-Boo. Please be short, sweet, and to the point.
To assume that we're a melting pot, a mixed salad or whatever, and it ain't that way. It's never been that way. And until we...
Hello, caller. Welcome to K-Boo.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, I just think at the heart of some of your arguments is this idea that we should lower standards for individuals and groups of people and communities rather than raise them up. And I think that that just suppresses people's ability to be successful.
I don't think I've suggested at all that we lower standards.
What about the water police?
I, again, didn't suggest any lowering of standards. I just said that, in my opinion, having a 4-year degree doesn't prepare you better to be a police officer than having a 2-year.
Well, if you were studying Spanish and you studied for 4 years instead of 2, wouldn't that help you with the Hispanic community?
It could, but I know people that took Spanish their whole high school environment and can't speak a word today.
Well, then that speaks poorly of the students, and why would you hire that person?
Well, and I wouldn't if I was hiring them to interact with a Spanish population. But my point was it has a lot more to do with how people interact on a personal level with people rather than whatever the credentials. You know, if we just focus on 4-year degree and not focus on what the personality types are that we want in our police officers, then we miss a fundamental requirement to have a good community police officer. And I don't believe taking somebody that has a 2-year degree versus someone with a 4-year degree says that you're lessening standards if, in fact, that individual has a wealth of other talents that they bring to the job that makes them better able to interact with people of color, low-income people, rich people, everybody. Because
wouldn't that same person do better in 2 more years of college?
I don't know. I don't believe that's the deciding factor on whether they would be better.
No, I mean the same person you're speaking of. If they had 2 additional years of college, more courses, more exposure to different things in college, wouldn't they be a better person, more capable of new tasks?
I don't believe that would make them a better person.
Well,
no.
Then how about if we take a year away from that person? Would that make no difference either?
I don't think so. I think that there's a personality type that we should be looking for, and it has.
Then why even bother having a high school degree?
Well, because you got to have a high school degree to get any job, just about.
No, that's not true. That's not true at all, is it? Because the people that don't finish high school and eighth got jobs.
And so, well, unless you want to live in a minimum wage world your whole life.
That's my point precisely. We should be raising expectations and standards, not compromising them so that people can get into a certain position and make someone else feel comfortable.
So
they should stretch their own horizons and become better people.
So, you believe that someone with a four-year college degree is much better able to be an effective police officer? That certainly can't be true, because the own data that we have shows that the police, in fact, doesn't treat everybody the same. And so we've got a lot of police officers that came in with the four-year college degree, and those are the ones that are racially profiling people. They've
really?
Been there.
That's a very, very narrow stereotype that can't be true. Can't be true.
What do you mean it can't be true?
You're saying right now that police officers, I presume in Portland, have a four-year degree, are racially profiling, while people with two-year degrees aren't. And you had one caller say that the people with two-year degrees coming out of some parts of the states had a narrower point of view, were probably more likely to do the racial profiling. And I would agree with that. I think 4 years of college is much better than two. Four is better than one.
The caller
four is better than none.
The caller was talking about being in a small community that
exactly.
had no people of color. And so if you were in a small community and you had a four-year degree and you never interacted with people of color, you never met poor people, you never met African Americans, and then all of a sudden you were hired by the Portland Police Bureau to interact in a community that's half people of color, you're going to tell me that that officer, because he has a four-year college degree, is going to be able to understand what the cultural norms are of all the communities that he's now responsible for protecting
and serving? Education and community development for the individual as well as people and groups of people would not be relied on color, but relied on their ability to interact with all people in a society or a community.
You know,
not because their color is going to give them a job or a leg up, but because of their character, as I think Martin Luther King was trying to emphasize.
You know, I love it when white people throw Martin Luther King at me to try to make a point about race.
Yeah, I think Martin Luther King would be astonished at how racial you are on an issue that's community-based.
Fair
and honest.
Well, wait a minute. Now, wait a minute.
Character.
How can you call me being racial on an issue when I'm saying...
Are you saying
if
people
someone,
of color should be hired because they're from a community rather than qualified because of their education, their background, and all the other factors that going in to be a good member of society?
I did not say that at all.
Well, then why
Who
not
show
take
was
the
you listening
four-year
to?
Person over the two-year person? And why does color enter into that?
Well, color, if you have never interacted with people of color, and all of a sudden we give you a gun and tell you to protect and serve a community that the only your only interaction has been seeing them on the evening news in handcuffs or reading about them in the newspaper, if that's been your only interaction with communities of color, I have no expectation that you're going to be able to do an effective job if you're from a community that you've never had to interact with people of color. That's my view, and if that's a racist view, then so
yeah,
be it.
I'm sorry it is.
Me too. Have a good day. Okay, next caller. 30 seconds, please. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, hi.
Hi. You're on.
I just wanted to talk about what they're talking about right now. As far as, like, them finding a four-year college in a rural community, she used the example of, well, what if they went to a four-year college in a smaller community?
Right.
The chances of that happening are slimmer. You're not going to have the smaller community colleges in an urban area, and you're not going to have a four-year city college out in, you know, in the middle of nowhere. And just the idea of having someone in school for an extra 2 years, having them work with groups of people, whether they're, you know, white and black or white and Asian or white and Hispanic or white and any other race, just having them work with groups of people and be interactive and be, like, required to work with people for another 2 years. I mean, if anything, the chances of their levels of reasoning at least would be higher. You know, maybe they won't be exposed to poor, low-income areas, you know, I mean, that's definitely something you have to grow up in to experience and to know anything about firsthand, but at least it might, like, encourage them or give them a little bit more information as far as how to deal with people that aren't like them.
You had the last word, and I thank you kindly, but we got to wrap up. Time is up.
All right, thanks.
Have a great day. It's been a pleasure being here with you today. As always, callers have been challenging, informative, and have given us a lot of food for thought. It's been my pleasure to be here. See you next week, same time, same place, same channel.
Stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up. Stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up. Stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up. Stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Teach a man, don't tell me. Heaven is on the tier. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an art that needs a gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your rights. Come on,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up.
The May KVU board meeting will be postponed until June 3rd, 10 to 2 p.m., held at KVU. We look forward to seeing you there. A special board meeting will be held May 27th, 10 to 2 at KVU. On the agenda will be web development and a closed executive session to cover a personnel issue. Again, the May KVU board meeting will be postponed until June 3rd. We look forward to seeing you there.
Good morning. It's the Thursday Morning Radio Zine for Thursday, May 25th. Coming up this morning, the Recovery Zone. Stephanie Potter speaks with members of Village Focus International, a nonprofit organization seeking to build partnerships between Portland and villages in Southeast Asia. At 9:30, Press Watch will not be on today. Instead, we'll hear a program featuring Ray McGovern, who spent 27 years as a CIA analyst. He now directs the Servant Leadership School, an organization dedicated to helping the marginalized poor. At 10, Radio Beyond Borders presents a documentary on accents produced by Mie Kim. At 10:30 on Art Focus, host Julie Bernard featured the upcoming exhibit at the Mark Woolley Gallery called Alien and Sedition, in association with Sedition magazine. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, topics include turmoil in Afghanistan, the Senate immigration bill, and losing Arab hearts and minds.